Hey there, welcome to Board Game Hot Takes, the podcast where we give our immediate reactions to the hottest board games just minutes after playing them. My name's Adam.
And I'm Chris.
And this is Tim.
We're going to give our hot takes on the game that we just finished playing, Beyond the Sun.
And before we provide a description of the game, we want to feature a listener that recently left us a review on Apple Podcasts. Scott Mellinson left a review with the title, Quality Reviews from Enthusiastic Hobbyists. I personally think I would have liked to seen enthusiastic reviews from quality hobbyists, but, you know, either is good. So thanks, Scott. That's awesome. What he said in his review, these reviews dive deep into mechanics of the game and the different perspectives from gamers of a diverse and varying background. Well, we're not that diverse, but again, thanks, Scott. These reviews really help me identify any potential deal breakers when it comes to gameplay and overall fun factor of a game based on the perspectives of people who just played the game moments before the podcast. In today's market, there isn't enough time or enough money to play every game produced, so this podcast really helps me identify games I would or would not like to purchase or play. So thanks so much, Scott. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much, Scott. Appreciate it.
If you'd like to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, not only will you get a shout out on the show, but you'll also gain two entries in our Frosthaven giveaway. So we'd love to see some more reviews coming in. Now let's jump into a description of the game.
Beyond the Sun is a game which revolves around researching technology with the end goals of technological mastery and the colonizing of planets beyond our solar system. Paraphrasing from the rulebook, nuclear war, lack of resources, and civil unrest has left humanity with no choice but to abandon Earth. Faced with this realization, humanity began to work together. Hyperspacecraft were designed and propagated, as were advances in terraforming techniques, radiation-resistant crops, and asteroid mining. Research continues, and the race to develop it has become the ambition of Earth's factions. Players take turns acting as one of these factions, moving their action selection token to an available space, paying the resources if required, taking that action, then ending every turn with one of three production actions. Grow your population, mine ore, or trade these resources for one another. Points are earned in numerous ways, including planet colonization, technological development, in-game bonuses, and in-game goals. Beyond the Sun is designed by Dennis K. Chan and published by Rio Grande Games.
So let's get into the conversation. Let's start with the mechanisms and gameplay of Beyond the Sun. And Chris, I'm interested to hear your thoughts. Tonight was your first play of this game. So tell us, you know, what's something that stood out to you from a gameplay perspective tonight?
Well, before I jump into that, let me ask you guys a question. And the way when we started tonight, the way you guys were talking about it, it sounded like this idea of the technology tree is a style of game. Is that right, or is this something that's relatively unique?
I think this is very unique. You know, tech trees exist in other games. Typically, I've seen them in, you know, kind of like dungeon crawler type of games where you can upgrade your characters and take different paths. I think civilization games are commonly will have tech trees where, you know, you can get to one technology if you've built something else previously. I think this game is very unique in that is the primary mechanism, the primary focus of the game.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting because my immediate reaction to it was, even though the game is not similar in almost any other way, it had a lot of the feel to me of Tapestry. And Tapestry is a game that I love, and it had a similar feel to that. And like you guys just said, for those who have not played the game, the main board is a technology tree where you spend a good chunk of your time trying to buy into technologies, advanced technologies, and obviously the higher the technology level you get, the more benefit you get out of it. There's also another kind of like a sideshow board, which I shouldn't call it a sideshow because it's pretty important to the gameplay, where you're traveling around the galaxy trying to colonize planets, but it's the technologies that in a lot of ways let you get there. And I found that to be really interesting. It was a neat little combination of a very large kind of technology building worker placement with on the side a little bit of dudes on a map in a very small way, but in a way that I thought was effective and made the game really enjoyable.
Yeah, that's an interesting comparison to Tapestry, Chris, because I think that, yeah, tech trees, like I said, it comes from civilization games a lot. And I think that's what, you know, what Jamie Stegmaier was trying to do with Tapestry a little bit. But Tapestry is a little more linear. You know, the tech trees, you have to get through one thing to get to the next one. This one is kind of cool because it adds some of those choices, the diverging paths, where if I investigate this first technology, then I have two, you know, choices of a level 2, and I can go to this one. That gives me a few different choices in level 3. And so it's kind of cool that it allows you to take different choices, but then some of those paths reconverge and sometimes you have to have discovered like two certain level twos before you can get to this other level three. So it's definitely some interesting choices.
Yeah, Tim, there's prerequisites here. So you have to have two level ones to make a certain level two, or two level twos to make a level three. And in some cases, you know, you can go straight through a level one, in one case go straight through to level three. But for the most part, you have to have some combination of level ones to make a level two, to march your way up the tech tree, which, again, that's a difference than Gaia Project or Tapestry, as far as I know, that you know, these things kind of diverge and require prerequisites to build the next step, as opposed to just a linear step up, marching your way up the single track to gain more technologies. Have you seen anything where you have to have a prerequisites to build a certain technology?
Yeah, again, I haven't played a lot, but I've seen it. I've seen it in some other Civilization games that do it. And then, you know, kind of the classic RPG games. I remember some of the old Final Fantasy video games back in the day would have that type of mechanism where, you know, you could uncover the ability to do this one spell, and then you could go two different directions. You could either choose to go into the healing direction or the, you know, damage direction. So this is not a new thing, but I think it is fairly new for how much of a focus of the game it is. So Adam, tell me what your thoughts are on a second play here. What did you think about the actual choices that came out of those technologies? You know, once you get up to level two and level three, did you find they were interesting? Like, did the technologies actually present interesting options? And how did that feel to you? Did you feel like it was actually, a nice flow?
I did feel like that. And it gives you a choice, right? So there's a prerequisite, say a color red, and you flip up cards until you get two red cards up. And you get to choose. It's a nice flow and nice having that choice. It's, in almost all cases, it seems like there's one that's much stronger and that works much better for the current situation that you're in. So in that regard, you know, it's nice to have that choice, but then there's one that you're definitely going to choose. And maybe not always, but most of the time I felt like, oh yeah, I want to do this one, and because it works better for me in my situation. I don't know if you guys were getting that sense too, like, it gave you a choice, but really not really a choice.
I mean, I think some of the choices were challenging, but I think what I found is that when you're going up to level twos, they tended to just feel like slightly stronger level ones. You know, like if you're on the military track, the level one is, you know, you can create a ship and then move a couple spaces. Then you go to the level two, and then it's like you can create, a bigger ship and move a few spaces or something. So it felt like a slight change, but then once you move to level threes, then things really started to get interesting. That there was a lot more difference between the choices you were making.
Okay, so one thing I was not aware of, and I've been through two plays, is what the different colors represent. I assume red represents like a military track, and there's something for each different color, but that's something I never picked up on.
Yeah, I haven't read the flavor, but there's clearly some kind of central theme between the different, between the colors.
Yeah, it's interesting. Maybe this is just the fact that I didn't really spend a lot of time working my way up the track. I actually spent more time trying to colonize planets. But I did not notice that significant difference when you got up to level three. And again, maybe it was just because I wasn't paying as much attention because I wasn't on that track. But I noticed the same thing that Adam did, that when you got to the level one and level two, they were relatively subtle differences. And I kind of thought that same thing was true of level three. I think we got one level four that got busted out. But in a way, that's a good thing. And maybe in a way, it's a bad thing. Because on the one hand, it's not like, and I'm going to do a lot of comparing to Tapestry, but it's not like Tapestry where you get to those higher levels and you're like doing these earth shattering, you know, moves. But what that does is it means that you're not going to kill the game just by getting up to that level four. You still have subtle decisions that have to be made. And they're not always going to be obvious. And I thought that actually made it kind of interesting, even if you didn't have quite as many of those drop a bomb kind of moments.
And Chris, that's something I totally want to agree on. This game just felt a little more, it feels mellow. Like you're not making these drastic earth shattering choices. I think you just said earth shattering, but I'm going to use the same term. You're not making these huge choices that's going to pivot the game 180 degrees, depending on what you do. It's just kind of, do I want to go this way or do I want to go that way? And sometimes that's kind of nice to not have this epic decision to make, just kind of a mellow choice for the most part. I don't know, Tim, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, just that I think you guys were generally focused on the top of the board today, which happened to be the military track. And I think that the military upgrades are almost all focused on creating or upgrading ships and moving ships around. So it's all focused on that side of the board. So I think when if you're just doing those technologies, it doesn't feel like it shifts too much. What I noticed on some of the other technologies, the yellow, green, blue, and again, I don't know exactly what they represent, but it seemed like a much bigger shift of what you could do. Like there was that one level three technology that got opened up that immediately gave you an active the ability to, what is it, discover or research a level one or two technology without the prerequisites. And then in the future, if there was a card that had two prerequisites, you didn't have to meet both of them. And so that drastically changed the ability to research, you know, later in the game. And that was nothing like you would have seen in the level one or two tracks. So I do think that there is some big, you know, game changing things that can happen in there, but you have to go down the right tracks to get them. And I don't think the military track is the right one to do there. Now, that being said, I'm not saying they're unbalanced or they broke the game or anything like that. The two of us that investigated some of those kind of really unique technologies were not the ones that won the game. Chris did with his colonization. There's definitely a lot more to explore here, I think. You know, I've had two plays right now. They played out pretty differently. We saw a couple of the same technologies come up, but we also saw some very different ones. And it was fun to see those. And I think there's a lot more in those decks to explore and the different combinations for them to explore. So I think there's a lot to dig in.
Yeah, that's a joy, is seeing all these different technologies that come out. And, you know, you do get to scan through them and you get to choose them. And sometimes you might see the same one. Sometimes you're going to get a totally new one. And that gave me a good, you know, exciting kind of feel to go through these technologies. And not only that, but when you research, you're the first one to research a new technology. You get to flip over these event cards for usually, again, some kind of a mild bonus. So that also gives a nice little dopamine hit right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of my few complaints about the game was those event cards. They were a little bit too mellow. you're definitely right about that. They were mellow almost to the point of being, you know, a lot of times in games like this, you want to be the first person to take an action. In this one, yeah, maybe, maybe not. They weren't a huge deal. I wish they were a little bit more of a deal.
Well, I think that they combined, they were nice that there was that opportunity there and they didn't do a whole lot, but you got a combination of things. If you were the first one to investigate, to research a new technology, right? You got that event card, which sometimes gave you a minor bonus. Maybe it gave you an ore, or it was worth a victory point at the end of the game, or sometimes it let you make a decision for the whole table. So that's not huge, it's minor. But then the second, I think, more important thing is that you get to make the choice of which technology comes up there, right? You flip cards of the right colors until you find two, and you get to pick one of them. And sometimes you're making a decision just for yourself, but you also can say, hey, who's the other person that's behind me moving up this track and what are they focused on this game? And you can kind of pick something that may not be as useful for them. So I think, you know, it's probably good that event isn't too beneficial for just the person exploring it, because you have a couple things you're getting out of there, but it does add a little fun to that process. And I like that.
Aside from the tech tree, the system board, the little sideboard.
Yeah, like system board, right? Yeah, like the planets all out in
the
space.
The planets, right. But what are you guys' thoughts on that sideboard and player interaction specifically in the tech tree region and both in the sideboard region? How does that, I don't know, compare it to something else? Like, I have a comparison to Dune I'll explore, but I want to hear your guys' thoughts on the player interaction piece with this, the tech tree, and then the sideboard piece.
First, Adam, I want to point out that all the times you messed with me on that board, you still came in last place today. So maybe you stop doing that.
I wish we were recording this podcast after the game on Friday.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that comparison to Dune is pretty interesting. Like, we brought up player interaction on our, you know, a couple episodes back when we were talking about what we find fun in games. And the type of player interaction that I said I like is when there is a lot of interaction, but it's not super targeted. Okay, it is targeted here, but it's not so impactful that it's that negative. Like, there were so many times when Adam, and I don't know why it's always Adam, but specifically Adam tonight, could have picked to go to an empty system and take control of it, or go to Steve's system or Chris's system, and he just kept going to my systems all the time. So you definitely can make some choices. You can target somebody, but the impact isn't that huge. You lose production for that turn, not the end of the world. So I think it's fun. I think there's definitely a lot of opportunity to interact with the other players and to motivate you. And you guys saw it, right? You went down the military tracks, and your military actions were so much more beneficial. You had tons of huge ships out there. You're moving four times every time you take a move. With me, all I was ever doing was putting a number one ship up there, maybe upgrading one level, and then moving two spaces. And so, because I didn't invest in that, I really felt like outclassed over there, but I still was able to do some things. And I think the board is really well laid out that it gives you those opportunities to really go after a lot of different pursuits out there on that board, regardless of what technology you're discovering.
Yeah, and Tim, I was actually thinking about the comments you had made in the What Makes Gaming Fun episode, in that this reminded me a lot of what I think you had described as what you like in player interaction. And I think you used Dwellings of Eldervale as an example, saying, you know, there's combat there and you're going to fight somebody, but it's not, you're not going to take something out of the game by fighting. It was the same thing here, that you could go in there and you could mess with somebody a little bit, but you couldn't mess with them a lot. You could mess with them enough to get, maybe make it so they weren't getting a benefit out of a specific space, but you weren't wiping them out. You don't even kill their ships. All you do is you reduce their ability to get a specific benefit from that space. And I thought that was a nice level of interaction. And I, added to the fact that I really like having that board out there, I thought it was a really nice combo.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Yeah.
I think the worst case scenario here is you have your ships in a position where you can colonize your next turn, and then somebody comes in and, you know, out overpowers you, takes control, and now you can't do your colonize the next turn, and then that kind of wastes the whole turn. So it can be a little bit vicious for sure.
Yeah.
But again, is it super crushing? I think that's the worst case that I just brought up. I'm sure there's worst case that you could manipulate out there, but that's one of the worst cases. But it's not super crushing, and you still have your ships alive, and it doesn't rewind you eight turns in the game or anything, or put you back out. So I don't know. I really like the interaction here. So to compare it to Dune Imperium, I feel like it's just one notch more mellow than Dune Imperium, where at Dune Imperium, you're having that conflict at the end of every round, duking it out for a point or maybe two, or maybe some kind of moving up some track. And here it's just a little more subtle, a little more, I don't know if nuanced is the right word, but it's not so in your face as, so I put a notch below Dune Imperium. I don't know what would be slightly below this game, maybe Dwellings of Eldervale. I don't know if you guys have any other comparisons.
No, I would say it was very comparable to Dwellings as far as the level of interaction. And I personally would even say that this is very close to Dune. It, you know, a little different in that maybe the Dune conflicts are more impactful. You know, whoever the winner is going to have a bigger reward from it, but it's not really targeted either. So I don't know. It feels very similar. I think those are all good comparisons for similar levels of player interaction without just meanness, you know, not just take that. Now, I want to talk about that colonization board, or whatever we're calling it, the space board, a little bit, or a couple mechanisms there that I really liked. And that is the planets that you're moving into, right? So if you move into a planet and you have the most control there, you get to put one of your influence tokens there, which give, or production tokens or whatever, but that's going to help your production. That's really cool. It's a nice little benefit. Some of them though, when you take, or they're control tokens, I guess, but some of them, when you take control, you get an immediate benefit. So that's a fun, just a fun little thing to be like, hey, I'm going to move in there and I get something right away, and then I'll get production later, but that's cool.
And just to add on to that, that gives a little incentive, you know, for other players to not just give control. So you're going to have that back and forth, that kind of tug of war.
Exactly.
So that's what I like about that.
Yeah, that's really nice. And then the colonization action itself, which is cool. And that is that if you can take a colonization action, if you've got enough power to meet the colonization action, then you move that card, that whole system card gets moved over by your player mat. You add another production token to it, so it gets more beneficial there. You turn the ships that are on it back into resources on your mat, which actually can have a, well, I want to talk about the resource mat and kind of how those interact in a little bit, but that also can be beneficial. And then there's usually a colonization benefit for the board itself. So, and each of the systems is a little bit different, and that's really neat. It's got a lot of variety, and I think we saw very different systems on our second play than we did on our first play. So it was fun, again, to just see the variety there and explore them and get those little, you know, those little dopamine hits, little triggers of, hey, I just got an extra bonus for doing this basic action in the game.
Yep.
Yeah. So let's talk about the, well, before we do, let's, did you guys have any other comments about the system board?
Chris, you got anything? I feel like.
No, I like it. That's basically what I'm going to say. I like that board.
Right.
I want a little bit of dudes on the map fits in anywhere. And this is one of them.
Exactly. It adds that dudes on a map. Little
area majority or area control element.
Area control, yeah. Area majority that I just love, and that little bit of interaction and going in here and seeing what's the smartest kind of tactical move to make for that round. And I like that the every round you get to do a production at the end. So you can go in there, colonize this, shoot some discs out, put your discs on there, and you get the immediate production. And that's part of that not so detrimental effect to other players, because other players can go back in there, shoot your disc out, and get their production right away. So even though your disc gets kicked out, there's always the opportunity to come right back in, get your disc back in, and get some production out of it. So not to repeat myself five or six times. But that dudes on the map thing is just nice. The spaceships on a map is cool.
Right on. Let's talk about the one of the, I think that's a pretty unique system here, and that's kind of the resource management of the game. So in the game, you start with two populations. So there are these two little cubes with characters on them. You start with a few ore, and then you've got this player mat that has several columns of these resource tokens on them. What the resource tokens are really, they're dice. They're six-sided dice. So the one side shows a resource cube. And so when it's sitting on your player mat, unused, untapped, and available to potentially take advantage of, it just looks like a resource. And then there are some actions that allow you to convert that into population. So you just take that resource cube off your mat and you turn it into a person on your population mat. But then there's other actions, other technologies that will allow you to turn that population into a starship. So you take that same cube, that same D6, and you flip it to a side and it's either a 1, 2, 3, or 4 level ship. So pretty neat that they've got these different resources that are being managed in the game and they're just used with this one component. So that's pretty cool. But the other neat thing about that player mat is that when you're doing production, you only produce the column of population that's above what you've unlocked in the board. And so it becomes a really interesting push and pull where like, hey, yeah, I want to do a lot of population, get lots of people out so I can do research with them and I can turn them into ships. But if you use up that first column on your board and you haven't unlocked enough in production, you might take a production turn in the future where you can't even get more population. And so it's a little bit of an interesting, like, you know, challenge to kind of make sure that you've got the right resources available. What did you guys think about that whole system? Did you like it? Did you feel it was too punishing? What do you think about it?
Yeah, I started thinking that it was going to be overly punishing. But honestly, once we got going with it and we got, at least to me, I felt like I got the hang of it. It didn't feel so much like that. I felt like you had to use a little bit of forethought and you had to use a little bit of strategy, but you know, it wasn't that hard to keep yourself, you know, liquid in the game. So I thought that was actually kind of nice.
I think it's just cool. You have these, they use, and it seems novel to me. So you have this, you know, a dice, and that can be a ship up to strength 1, 1 through 4. And then, so that's 4 faces. And then the other side can be a dude, or the other side is just a generic resource. And the way you manage those, I think it's just so clever to have these columns and then you expose the rows below those that let you produce this or that. I think it's just a very clever, very novel system that I enjoy very much.
The one other thing that's neat is you can take those production discs and what's the action called that you can
automate
them. And so then you can just take them off your mat permanently and put them into a little like scoring row at the top of your board. So there's kind of some neat opportunities to just be like, hey, I don't want to fight for production out in the system mat all the time. So I'm going to you know, take actions that allow me to automate those things and still get production out of them. So a couple different ways to go about that. And I think what that does is it reinforces that there are multiple strategies in this game. Now, the two games that we played, that I've played so far, colonization was very beneficial. I don't think it was the only thing that won the game. Like, right, Adam got the most points from colonies tonight and didn't win the game. Chris did. He had second place.
Lowest points overall, yeah. Most colonies, lowest points overall.
Yeah, so it was a combination. Chris managed to do a lot of research and, you know, research a lot of tech as well as colonize a decent amount, and that was cool. On the other hand, like I did, Steve and I did very little colonization. We weren't too active on the board out there. We were, you know, taking advantage of it a little bit here and there, but we had a lot of focus on like, I automated 5 discs. I researched, I was the only one that researched out the, you know, level 4 technology at the end of the mat. So we kind of had very different strategies and Chris and I ended up 1 point away for first and second place. I think that's cool. And I think that automation option is one of the ways that they allow you to kind of make choices about how you go about the strategy you're choosing.
Agreed. The automation is pretty neat. The disk management, resource management, how you're going to produce. It's pretty slick.
All right. Do you guys have any other thoughts about the gameplay before we jump into production?
There's something I want to note. I'm not sure how to, you know, exactly put words to it. So Chris had such a broad stroke of available actions to him because he researched almost all the level 1s and a lot of level 2s. And did you research any level 3s, Chris?
One. Just one.
One level 3. And then tonight, I tried to work my way down the upper side of the tech tree. And so I had, you know, like 2 level 1s, 3 level 2s, 2 level 3s, preparing for level 4, which I never got. So, you know, I was very narrow focused, moving left to right, whereas Chris was very broad focused, top to bottom. So the other night when we played Tim, I had some synergies that, you know, between my level 3 actions and my level 2 actions, I could just go boom, boom, back and forth. And same thing, I was very narrowly focused on moving left or right laterally, whereas Chris tonight, it was kind of neat to see how he was working it top to bottom and just had this broad range of actions available to him, and he pulled it off nicely. So I like that you can try to go left to right and work it all the way across, or you can go top to bottom depending on what texts come out and how you work them together. Just a multitude of actions and a way to synergize them, which I thought was very nice.
I think it's a credit to the flexibility of the game that you can do that. And not only that, but I think that's also probably a product of the technologies that we drew. There were certain technologies we pulled out, and I imagine that, you know, there's a pretty large deck. You could have also had a very different set of technologies that wouldn't have lent themselves to playing that way.
All right, well, let's talk about the production of the game. I want to start on this one, if you guys don't mind, because after my first play of this game, and I enjoyed the mechanisms, right? I told Adam in the middle of it and the other guy we were playing with, and I was like, guys, you know, this got some really interesting stuff going. I really liked it. But the next day, we stepped away from that game, and I thought about the game all weekend, and I could not get out of my mind how ugly it was. Like, and I'll talk to that because my opinions changed a little bit on a second play, but a lot of the components of the game, specifically your player boards and then the tech cards you're playing with, they feel so much like a prototype. Like, they all look like things that somebody would have put together in their first iteration, messed around with it. Maybe they created in Microsoft Word or in Excel or something like that. And it still has that prototype feel to it. And that was really hard for me to get past initially. What do you guys think about that? I mean, I'll come back and tell you how my opinions have shifted a little bit, but did that bother you? Did you feel like, did you feel the same way, or did that not really impact your feeling?
I want to hear what Chris has to say.
Well, I mean, it's not a real pretty game. I mean, there's really very little art to speak of. There are no miniatures. You have dice. And the dice, you don't roll the dice, but, you know, there's different pictures on the dice, but they're very stylized and they're not really terribly artistic. So in that sense, no, it's not a super pretty game to look at. But on the one hand, you know, it may not be that attractive. But on the other hand, I thought that the use of the dice to represent all the different resources that you have other than ore, I thought was incredibly elegant. I thought it was effective, and I thought it was easy to use. And, you know, it's funny, until we had this conversation right now, it never even really occurred to me just how unspectacular the production of this game was. Mm. It was a good, solid game. It was a lot of fun. And maybe it was fun and solid enough that it made me ignore the fact that that it's just not that good looking.
Well, that's amazing. This has got to be a first where I was really put down by the production and Chris is all about the mechanisms today. So
what is happening? This is crazy.
Cat sleeping with dogs.
I have to like kind of agree with you guys, but I love with, you know, you guys are saying different things, but I kind of agree with him that I love this. It's ugly, but I love this ugliness. You have these little symbols by the technologies. It looks like a kid drew a dragonfly with some dots and some lines. And then the font they use for the numbers, the one, the two, it looks like some bygone digital era, just little strikes that they use to represent tech level 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. There's just not much art to it. Chris says stylized. Is it though? It's tough to say. And then you go over to the sideboard and it looks like maybe a whole different artist was in charge of that junk. And it's tiny. Why is the sideboard so tiny? I feel like it's a big focus of the game. You got the tech tree that's freaking giant, which maybe rightfully so, but I don't think it has to be that giant. You could probably use smaller cards or whatever. And then the sideboard is a third the size, and a lot of the action is happening over there. At least half the action is happening over there. So some weird choices. The player boards look like Excel spreadsheets.
Yeah, they're bad.
They're functional.
They're bad.
Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, they're very clean, right? They're very functional. You don't get confused by what you can do on them. The cards, I don't know, maybe it would break it if they put a bunch of art on the cards. It would, you know, get in the way if they put color on it. I think they could do it better than they did, though. I really do. Now, I came back to it today, right? So I sat there the whole weekend with it in my mind. And in my mind, it was just a big white board with white cards on it. Coming back to it today, there's a nice picture of a globe. Is it planet Earth or some planet?
No, I don't think it's planet Earth. Not current day planet Earth, yeah.
Some picture of a planet behind it. And so there's color there on that big main tech tree board. But still, those individual cards, they still look like something that somebody just printed on their local laser printer and just did it as a prototype. And it's like the publisher met with the designer and said, this is a great idea. Let's ship it. Right? They didn't put any actual, like, Now they did, like you said, that planet board. That planet art is beautiful. It's pretty, you know, it works really well. I agree. I think the tech tree board could have been a little smaller. You shouldn't make the cards any smaller because some of them have a lot of text on them. But I think that board could have been smaller. There's a lot of blank space in between it. And you could have given some more space for the colony board, which is more people are interacting on it on a regular basis. There's more components that are on it. You know, so that was kind of a strange decision. I do also still wish that on a lot of those tech cards themselves, like how cool would it have been if there was something visually representing what that tech was? And you couldn't do it maybe on the level fours because there's so much text there. Maybe they would just have a little bit of coloring on it or something. But some of those level ones that half the cards used, you could have had a really cool stylized picture showing what it is. Like think Terraforming Mars or Underwater Cities even. Even something like that would have just been fun to kind of see the tech you're developing instead of just reading it as text on a card.
Agreed. Some of the names are made transdimensional AI. Like I guess the text there, you know, leaves it to the mind to figure out what that might look like, which is fun for some people, but subatomic fabrication, like, come on, these names are freaking rad. Like, give me some kind of amazing, what the heck is subatomic fabrication? Maybe do a little picture of it, like in the background of the card. That this stuff's just.
Yeah. Some of the military cards, like it would have been cool to see some of the ships, you know, like see some pictures of what some of the ships are that are being, you know, created out here with, you know, warships with all kinds of guns on them for the more powerful ships or stuff like that. There's a lot of opportunity there to show us a little bit and make it a more fun production. And so it really did like put down my feelings of this after the first play. Second play, again, I overlooked that and I just had so much fun playing it for a second time that I don't care as much. Mm-hmm. But I still, like, I would have a hard time buying this game to play it because I just don't want something this ugly in my collection. You know, like, it's just not something.
You guys are just too hung up on graphics. It's just too hung up on graphics.
It's not going to get me excited to get out and play it. I don't know. Maybe it will. I definitely had a good time with it. So I'd like to come back to it. But it's frustrating to me that the production is so weak.
I want to go back to this game is so utterly functional that I can totally look past the choices that they made here. And I can get down with this game. I love the ugliness here.
At least put some, at least, you know, a little bit of graphic design, a little bit of color on the cards, on the player boards. The player boards should have had something else than just gray and white, you know, alternating lines. Like, that's just so bad. But I get it, right? It is functional. The UI is very easy to use. It's very clean. It's easy to teach. It works. And so I can understand why they did that. It still feels like a little bit of a mess, though.
Let me go back to one of my main complaints of this game, and it kind of ties in with what we're talking about now, and that is the event cards that you flip over when you first research a technology. For one, way too text heavy. And that was the place where I really saw what I think you guys are talking about, which is you flip over this blue card, and it's another blue card with a whole bunch of small white text on it. And that's all it is. And it's not even like you're getting anything particularly exciting out of it. Because like I said before, you know, these are pretty minor effects. And so you have this really wordy, bland card with a minor effect. And I just found that incredibly unsatisfying. The other parts of it didn't bother me as much, but that one in particular really did.
See, I don't know. I think there's nuance in those cards that subsequent plays might reveal themselves a little bit more than we had on our one or two plays.
Cool. Well, that's all I have to say. It's too plain. Otherwise, it all works fine. So any other comments on production?
I mean, dual layer player boards. Hooray, that's kind of standard these days, but you know, they took the time to put it in there. And I think that's appropriate with all the discs and dice, so that helped out.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, I agree with that. Thanks for calling that out. I had forgotten to mention that. So let's jump in and talk about the moments of the gameplay tonight. Any particular moments that stood out to you guys to help our listeners get a feel for what playing the game kind of feels like? So Chris, do you want to start us out?
Yeah, sure. I was actually, as we were playing, I'm thinking, man, that's the moment I'm going to talk about. And it was, as I think one of you had mentioned, I spent a lot of time in this game building up and building up and building up my engine for colonization. And that was kind of really where I thought I was, you know, staking my claim here. And then we get down to the last turn. It's the where you end up closing this game out by four different conditions are met. Four people have to meet a condition for the end game. And we had met those conditions, and it was the last turn. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's colonizing time. And every single spot on the board that allowed you to colonize had been taken. And it was funny because, you know, this is a game where it was sort of like worker placement light. Like very infrequently did I find that I couldn't do what I wanted to do because somebody had already used up the spot, but that was one of them. And on the one hand, I was looking at it going, damn, you know, that was the one thing I wanted to do. But on the other hand, I was like, you know what? I gave you guys credit that maybe you saw me coming and did that on purpose. And,
and I was like, nope, no clue. didn't even realize it.
and, you know, I still managed to pull it out, but it was, I looked at that one. I go, there was some player interaction going on there. And that was kind of interesting.
Moments in the game for me, I want to say I really enjoy the emergent gameplay in this game. As it goes on, you're exposing new actions that are available, and you go from these simple five or six actions at the beginning of the game to having up to 10 or 15. Maybe Chris probably had even more than that available to him. But for me specifically, I was working my ship jumps and get to the planets and try to take control of these different planets. I had five or six ships out there on the sideboard, and I was able to disperse them and maybe gain control of three or four planets in one round. And I think by the end of that turn, I had control of five of the different little planets in a four-player game, which I was pretty proud of. You know, that's short-lived, but it felt pretty nice being able to have that kind of maneuverability with my ships.
Yeah, that was so on both your comments, on Chris's, you know, I wanted to mention that too, that for example, there was a tech that I turned over and didn't end up picking that allowed you to ignore other people blocking a space for you. So kind of, again, you know, I think there's opportunities in there to discover things that really can allow you to break the rules of the game.
Agreed. Very much so. And then, sorry to just keep talking about myself, but I'm going to do it again. I had at one point in this game, I had the choice to go for a colonization of a planet or to research a level 4. And so I was weighing, you know, which one's going to be better? I don't know at this point. I haven't played the game very much. So I decided to colonize. At the end of the game, I went and looked back and dug through the research, you know, the level 4 that I would have had at that time. And that level 4 would have given me, like, I think I counted 10 or 12 points, something like that. It was huge. It was an amazing card. So just knowing that my choices have that kind of consequence, that was just a fun moment for me to go through that thought process and be like, ooh, do I do the level 4? Do I go for the colonization? And that moment was pretty great for me.
The funny thing was that tech card that you would have turned over, it actually allowed you to colonize a planet off the top of the deck.
Exactly.
You would have gotten your colonization plus the level 4 tech bonus.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I was just hoping that I knew you were making that choice. And I was just like, oh, please don't pick the level 4 because I was going to do it on my next turn. And I wanted the, you know, the highest point value for that bonus. Exactly. So,
yeah. And that ties into the mechanic too. I thought I would have another round and be able to get to the point of researching that level 4. And then Steve snuck in there and put the fourth token out in a 4-player game that ends the game, or that starts the end game process. And it, you know, cut me short one round. I think we were all saying like, oh, if I only had totally, one more round, I would have got like 30 more points.
Well, it was funny too, because we knew, you know, three of the end round achievements had been met. And so we were waiting for one more, but I didn't think Steve was going to get it. I didn't catch that he had hit that one achievement that was available to him still. And so he surprised me with it. And because he went last, that meant that the rest of us only had one turn. And, you know, he got a second turn after that. But I was really expecting two more rounds there. And I think you guys were as well. So it really messed up. It changed the end game, you know, and it kind of some interesting sacrifice you have to make there to catch up to it.
For sure.
I wanted to mention, Adam, that turn, though, that you were talking about, too. That was a really cool thing. You know, like you had built up a lot of your ships. So you had all these, you know, 3 and 4 power ships around the whole galaxy. And that one turn you did a jump 4 action and ended up, I think you actually took over control of 4 spaces on the board. And that was huge. I mean, you literally just went from like more than half of the doubled the discs that you had in production in one turn. So that was really cool to see.
Yeah. So the whole time I was like, I need more ore. I couldn't get any freaking ore the whole game. So finally I got these ships out there and placed my ore discs out and was able to get some ore production. It felt really good.
Yeah.
What about you, Tim? What was a moment for you that stood out in the game?
There was a decision point early in the game that turned up, like kind of changed the whole direction that I was going to go. And that was that Steve and I both discovered or researched. Man, I cannot get the research
term. It's a tricky word.
So Steve and I both researched this level 1 tech, and it was the one that had a direct line to a level 3 tech, right? So beginning of the game. So I had researched just because I wanted what the level 1 tech did, but I actually didn't think that I'd end up using that level 3 tech. And then right after we both did that, then Adam ends up flipping over the one that removes another basic action that allows someone to research a level 3 tech. So Steve takes that, and the thing he turns over is so awesome that I had to go and do it. So I ended up following right behind him. And honestly, I probably would have completely ignored that track if he hadn't flipped it over, and it didn't happen to be just like what seemed like a perfect thing. And you guys were a little behind us because you would have had to research the level one and then the level three. So you guys never even ended up going towards that. But it completely changed the way Steve and I could play the game because of what that particular tech was. So it was just cool to me to see that game developed in a way that I was not expecting at all, produce some really early changes to the gameplay. And I think that's, again, just there's some potential here for things to really change up and feel very different from game to game. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Agreed. I like the idea of maybe a level four tech would come out super early in one game and take forever to come out in another game.
Yeah.
That's kind of appealing to me. That I like that 1-3 jump. Mm-hmm. Add some excitement.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, cool. Well, let's talk about, this was a first play for you, Chris, second play for me and Adam. Would you guys request to play this game again? Everyone seems pretty positive on it right now, but Chris, what do you think? You know, there's a lot of games out there to play. Would this be one of the ones you'd pick as a first choice?
You know, as homely as this thing was, and as much as it goes against my nature, I would ask for this game again. I don't know if it's a game that I'd want to play every week, every game night, but I'm intrigued enough by the puzzle that I would love to play this one again. And I hope that we do sometime soon.
I'm the same. I am just growing attached to this game, and it's mellow. It's just mellow to me, the way you kind of trot along and develop these texts and explore and open up new avenues. So yeah, very much. I very much want to play this game again. What about you, Tim?
Yeah, I do. I did enjoy it. And again, I liked it on my first play, but also was kind of turned off by it. On my second play, I think I've gotten past that a little bit and would just, you know, overlook it because I think it's really fun gameplay. It's really interesting mechanisms. It's very varied from game to game. So I'll probably request to play it again. Now, I think it's worth calling out, you know, this was one of the 2020 games that I was really intrigued by and interested in. And so to kind of compare that to the other 2020 releases that I found really exciting, I don't think this quite hit that number, you know, like it's not a number one game for me. There are a couple of games. Dune Imperium, I think, still stands for me as a game. I would usually choose that one first. It just seems more fun. And I think a big part of it is just the production, to be honest. I honestly think that if they'd done a better job with the production here, it would feel like a more fun experience to me and would draw me into it more. Dwellings of Eldervale, probably on the same point. I probably would rather play Dwellings than this most of the time. It has some of its own flaws, but it also has a lot of great things. And it just, you know, the whole package feels a little more complete to me. And that's all, you know, I'll say about it. I think it's great. And I think it's, you know, right up there for me as a 2020 release and as a game I will want to go back and explore. But I think it's not the complete package that would make it stand out compared to those other games.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, the production here is almost quirky, right? You have these, like, you put some tech cards above these columns and you're kind of, it's weird how everything's just kind of laid out. It is very, I don't know if underdeveloped is the right word, like your prototype-y, Tim. It's, I don't know. I keep bringing it back up, but I don't know. I like this quirky kind of, it does feel unfinished. I'm sure there's room for refinement. I'm sure a second edition will happen and they'll clean it up a little bit. I'm not that sure, but maybe it'll happen.
I mean, it may have been very intentional. Someone may have said, hey, we want this just to be super clean so that it's easy to see the text. And I can understand that. I still think there were some, you know, graphical touches that could have been done to just make it feel a little more finished. So yeah. That's it. Sounds good, guys. I mean, obviously a hit. We all enjoyed it quite a bit. So something I think we'll be getting back to sometime in the near future. All right. Well, let's talk about some other things that we're excited about in board gaming this week right after this. Well, welcome back. So tell me, you guys, what's got you excited in board games? Anything you've been playing or anything that you are interested in playing this week?
I have a few things. I ordered a used game called Jet Set. I have I like the flying theme, and I feel like it's just very underrepresented in board gaming, even though there's probably thousands of airplane games out there. But this game, Jet Set, it's older, maybe 20 years old. Let me pull up some info on it here so I can talk somewhat smartly about it. But it's this root structure all over Europe. You got these tiny little airplanes, you're buying up roots and you're collecting income from them. And you can also kind of post your airplanes on other routes, and you're trying to complete these. It's like advanced Ticket to Ride, really. Tom Vassell did a mediocre review on it like 15 years ago, but I picked it up and I've been exploring this thing, and it is pretty neat. I'm enjoying it a lot. A couple other things I want to talk about, but I will give the floor to one of you guys. Tim, what are you looking forward to?
That's awesome. Hey, so how did you find out about JetSet? It wasn't through the Tom Vassell interview, right? Was it?
No. So we were doing this thing on one of the Discord channels, like, hey, what's your favorite games by alphabet? And I was like, oh, that's an interesting question. I'll dig around to that. I got to J's and I had nothing. Hmm. So I went onto Board Game Geek and researched some of the top J games, I think that had at least, you know, a couple hundred votes and that were rated above like a 7. And so there's like Java, Jamaica, and then this Jet Set one was on there amongst a few others, John Company. So I took a look at Jet Set and researched, and it looked right up my alley. So I decided to pick it up.
Nice. All right, cool. So I have another route building game to talk about as well. I got a chance to play Whistle Stop by Scott Caputo and Bezier Games this week. Whistle Stop was kind of the prequel or predecessor, I guess, to Whistle Mountain, which is a game that we've played and reviewed recently and a game that I liked quite a bit. Very different gameplay, but they kind of put some of the same look and feel to it and set it into the same world. So Whistle Stop is a train game. Basically what happens is that there's this big open empty board. It's basically just like the frame for a board, and you pre-fill and there's a whole bunch of hexes that are going to end up filling in this board, and that's going to be different tracks that go together, so they fit together in different directions and things like that. You're building routes across the United States, essentially. It's from east to west. There's a couple pre-seeded tiles that you put out there. There's some endgame scoring tiles on the far west side. There's some really basic tiles on the far east side. And then there's some kind of, some varied things in the middle. But other than that, basically what you're doing on your turn is you're just playing, you're spending coal. You can spend up to 4 either coal or whistles to move one next stop. And that stop is usually going to be one more grid tile over. And you have 5 different trains you're doing. So you can move the trains on any combination. And if you get to a space that's empty, then you always have 3 of these little hex tiles in your hand, and you get to pick one of them to put out on the board and then move to the next stop in that space. It's a fairly straightforward game. You mentioned Ticket to Ride. I think it is just a little bit heavier. It's like a Ticket to Ride, heavier Ticket to Ride weight game. It's pretty interesting, actually. So what we found about, you know, a third of the way into the game is that it can be very aggressive. When you're placing tiles, you can put yourself in a situation where you put a tile that gives you a track running one way, but then it's got another track that makes the other train that's headed in that direction actually turn around and go the opposite direction. And coal in this game, you can only use it to move in the same column you're in or go further west, but there are these special rare resources called whistles. Whistles allow you to go backwards. So if you get stuck, you can stick somebody so they literally can't move because they're not allowed to use coal to go backwards and get back into a different route. Brutal. But they might have to use a whistle to turn around and go back. So that's kind of cool. And there's lots of little combo things that happen. There are tiles that you can get to that you basically can trade in these resource cubes you've picked out to get stock. At the end of the game, there's a lot of scoring that happens during the game. And then there are places that you can, towards the end of the game, trade in resources for points. But most of the end game scoring comes from these stocks. So there's 5 different stocks. And as you collect stocks throughout the game, basically at the end of the game, you're going to get 15 points if you have the most of a particular stock. And that's a really interesting competitive puzzle. Like at the end of the game, I played with Danielle and Jen. We were pretty equal. We were all at maybe around 60, 70 points, I think, when we got to the end game. And then we got to all the end game scoring. We got to adding up the stock. I didn't have the max in any category. And Danielle had like 3 and Jen had 2. So they both ended up getting another like, 30 to 45 points. And I just hung back there because they just managed every single time. Every time I would get a stock that would put me in the majority, one of them would go and take it. And I just got knocked out of everything. So it was a pretty cool thing to have to watch for that, watch what the other people are collecting. And there's kind of a cool thing. If you have the same number of stocks as somebody else, the stocks are numbered. So if you're the first one to pick up a stock, it's got a 1, the second would be 2. Whoever has the lowest number, if there's a tiebreaker, they get it. So rushing to a stock first gets you it was pretty cool. It was a neat game that I'd like to play some more. I would love to do like a back-to-back Whistle Stop, Whistle Mountain game marathon where you just add up the 2 points from the 2 games, put them together because they feel like they're in the same world and it feels like, 2 very different games that would go well together.
What did Danielle and Jen have any thoughts about the game?
you know, we played it late last night and none of us got a lot of sleep the night before that. So I think they were pretty exhausted by the end of it. So Danielle, by the end of it, okay. She ended up winning, of course, when she was like taking her last minute. She's like, I don't even care. I'm so tired. I don't care. I think they both enjoyed it. I think we'll play it again sometime soon and I'll get a better sense for whether they really liked it. But I bought it for Jen for her birthday because she'd mentioned that she was interested in it. And, you know, we chatted a little bit after and she's like, yeah, that was really interesting. Thank you. And I'd like to try it again. So I think they enjoyed it and it's pretty easy to teach and pretty easy to get into, but I think there's a lot of gameplay to explore there. So
cool.
Between Whistle Stop and Whistle Mountain, which one do you like better?
So far Whistle Mountain, I think it's definitely more unique, but, Whistle Stop does some things that I don't really have in other games. You know, I actually thought Whistle Stop, I think, Trekking the World had some similar feel to it. Again, maybe just that route building and kind of moving to get the different objectives and some of the racing. Whistle Stop is a little bit heavier than Trekking the World. So it kind of added, you know, it took some of those things that I liked in that game, but added just a little bit more weight and a little more meaty decisions to it. So I don't know. Again, only one play. I'd like to play it some more, but I thought it was pretty fun.
So Chris, what are you looking for? I have a guess about a specific Kickstarter that I won't say the name. I want to hear what you're looking forward to first before I say anything.
Oh, that's funny because I thought that I was going to get scooped by you guys and I'm surprised that I wasn't. And that's because my big exciting thing coming up is that on March 3rd, the pre-order begins for Red Rising, which, you know, we just had the interview with Jamie Stegmaier. And I mean, I got to say, man, I'm thrilled that this game is coming out because, you know, Tim got me interested in the books and now I can't put them down and I'm like loving the books. And of course the game coming out at the same time. And it's fun for me reading the design diaries and seeing the pictures and like, you have all the characters that I've been reading about. And so I'm super excited about that, but now I'm kind of curious to hear what it is that I'm missing on Kickstarter, Adam.
The same thing with the books that Tim started talking about. I was sleepy one night. I was like, I need to start reading this. So I picked up Red Rising. I started reading it and then 70 pages later and I'm like, holy cow, this is good. I can't stop reading it, but eventually I passed. So I can't wait to read more of that. The thing I thought you might be looking at, Chris, was Zombicide, Undead or Alive by Simon Games. It's just a box full of minis. The theme is just rampant in this thing. Old West zombies, man, come on, that sounds kind of cool. I don't even care about minis and or zombies, but Old West zombies, and looking at these minis, they're all like old-timey dressed up and all this stuff. So someone wants to drop 100 whatever bucks on a big old Simon mini game, this one looks kind of cool.
But it's a co-op, isn't it?
Yes. It is a co-op. Yeah,
that's the problem.
My take on it is it actually does look kind of fun, but my take on it after kind of understanding how the mechanisms go and, you know, when the game was developed, I actually do think that Cthulhu Death May Die does a lot of the same things, but probably better.
Okay.
To me, I think Cthulhu Death May Die is probably a more fun gameplay experience than the Zombicide games are.
So. And I was looking at it and it seemed like the same neighborhood as Cthulhu Death May Die.
I wanted to jump into Chris's comment about Red Rising. Chris, absolutely. I'm very excited about it. I'm actually really interested to hear your thoughts. So you weren't a big fan of the couple times we played Fantasy Realms together. Maybe you just didn't like it because, you know, it was short and it cost you league points. You know, you felt it was too luck-based. I don't know if you didn't actually like the gameplay, but, you know, Red Rising, the mechanisms are based on Fantasy Realms. I think they did some things that I think is going to make it a better game to me, because I think the problem with Fantasy Realms is that it was fun to try to put together a great hand and just combo things, but you basically had like 6 or 7 decisions to make. There just wasn't enough time to actually, you know, put a strategy together and really do something with it. And I think Red Rising kind of expands that and adds some other mechanisms that are going on, and to me makes it an even more fascinating game. But what do you think about that, Chris? The fact that it's kind of based on Fantasy Realms, does that put you off or get you excited?
Before Chris answers, it almost looks like Fantasy Realms plus Capital Lux, which
that's funny.
It's like the Chris double hatred combo.
with less in-game math. All the math comes at the end of the game, at least.
Yeah. I feel like you guys are just being provocative. No, I did struggle with that a little bit, and I really kind of, you know, dug deep to think, you know, how would I feel about that? And in reality, I think the big problem with Fantasy Realms, it's not that the gameplay mechanisms, I mean, it was relatively, you know, on the lighter end of, you know, Stonemaier games, but it's not necessarily the mechanisms. It was the fact that it was such a completely generic,
yeah,
you know, oh, this card's a knight, this card's a sword. You put the two of them together and you get, you know, I mean, it was just, it's kind of like Space Base. Yeah. It's Space Base is a fun mechanism. I like the game, but I don't like it that much because they just, it's so generic in a lot of ways. And then Capital Lux, it was kind of the same thing. Like, I think I even commented that if there had been more variety in the cards, it could have been a little bit more interesting, but instead you had, like, you know, it was almost like, you know, face cards in a deck of regular cards. They were all the same thing over and over and over again. And honestly, I feel like the mechanisms maybe could have, you know, handled themselves better in a game that had a little bit more theme to it. And this game definitely seems like it has a theme to it. And I'm not going to lie. I mean, the fact that I really like the books and I really like the characters is going to make a huge difference to me. And so, you know, but that's true of any game. I mean, I love Cthulhu Death May Die, not just because it's a great game, because it's a great game with characters that I really enjoy and that I'm very interested in. And I think that's probably true for a lot of people who like to play games.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was just curious about that, Chris. And I'm on the same page. I actually think the gameplay looks really fun. And like I said, I like Fantasy Realms anyway, and I think this brings it a little bit higher. And I think, Adam, this kind of goes to your point about saying you want to find games that are the right weight for the, you know, like the gameplay for the weight that you're getting. So this is not going to be a super complex game. It's not going to be a super thinky game, but it just looks like fun. And, you know, for how easy it'll be to get into and how quick it'll play, I think we'll have a pretty fun gameplay experience out of it. So I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Right. I'm guessing a couple pages of rules that probably just are self-explanatory anyway. Yeah. You jump into it and then you're playing a game against the rules get out of the way and you're just playing against the other players, which is cool.
Yeah. Just from the couple reviews I've read in the design diaries, I feel like I could teach the game right now, you know, without ever having even read the rule book or anything. So it seems very simple, very straightforward.
So last few things I want to tie up are Jet Set. That's designed by Chris Gould and the publisher is What's Solpog Games? And that was published back in 2008, so ancient by modern standards.
And so you've actually gotten a chance to play this a little bit now.
I've dug around. I've done a few turns, a couple rounds. Okay. I haven't got too much into it, but, you know, it looks neat. It has that little player interaction, player entanglement, where you're in each other's business, but it's not like direct stabbing each other in the back. You're just kind of, if you want to use somebody else's route, you got to pay them $5, and you might have to do that in order to meet your in-game route that gives you super bonus points. So it's, you know, you're kind of trying to deduce what another player's route might be and take up those routes first and get in their way so that they're going to have to give you payday. Money's pretty tight. So it is a financial game. So you're trying to make those profits any way you can in this game.
Cool. So what's the other one that you're looking at?
The last thing I want to talk about was Cora Quest. It's a Kickstarter that just wrapped up. It's been getting a lot of press. This is a game designed by Dan Hughes and his daughter, Cora. It's just delightfully charming. If you haven't heard Dan Hughes on his, I think he's got a few podcasts out there. Sporadically Bored is one of them. He's just a charming individual and good-hearted from what I can tell. And his daughter is just lovely. And they designed this game during the quarantine, and it features a lot of representation of all types of people. And the art is done by, a lot of it is submitted by other children. So one of the buddies from this Discord group I'm in, his son, submitted some artwork with Sword Girl, and she's this girl in a wheelchair, and they sent this in, and that was selected. And then on one of the Kickstarter updates, it shows how the artist goes in and takes this original drawing and adds the highlights and computer rendering and turns this, what was already a good drawing, into this amazing computer rendered Sword Girl slashing in this medieval wheelchair looking thing, and she's ready to fight and do this dungeon crawl. So just a neat idea. I wanted to just hype that up more. It's getting plenty of hype, but I think it deserves it all. And it looks like a fantastic, amazing little game, Cora Quest.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool idea. And what was neat, I like that art, what they did with the art as well, you know, because they said, yeah, the kids created the art. And I'm looking at this art and I was like, yeah, it looks like if an adult created art that kids had theoretically made. So the way that they went through that process of taking a kid's, you know, rough drawing and then filling it in and shading it and adding some detail. So it almost turns into something that, like, you know, Kyle Farren would have, you know, created for Fort or something like that, you know, that starts to feel like just stylized, cool art that would go in a kid's game.
Totally.
It's pretty neat. Are you buying this with the intent that you think you and your daughter will be playing it together?
Yeah, absolutely. She might be a little young at this point. She's 5. So I think I think Cora is...
Well, it's a Kickstarter. You won't get it for 2 years anyway.
Exact. So I got some room to grow, at least 2 years. So I think she'll be, you know, mentally there when the game gets here. And you, another aspect of, you can create your own characters. So if nothing else, she likes to draw all these dragons and stuff. I can scan that into the printer, upload it to their site that they have, apply some attributes, and then print it out and laminate it or whatever. And then we have another little character for the game that my daughter created. And I'll probably draw some too. And it just looks like just tons of fun. So yeah, the idea is to play it with her, something we can do together and romp around and do this little dungeon crawl.
I was actually really tempted as well. My daughter's 9 though. And like I said, I expect, you know, I wouldn't actually have it in my hands for a year, you know, or more, who knows, with Kickstarters. And so I'm like, yeah, she's going to be 10, 11 at that point. It's probably a little on the older side. She's not going to want to be hanging out with her dad anyway at that point. So, so I passed, but good luck. I hope it ends up being a fun experience, you know, with your kid. All right, cool. Well, I think that will wrap us up this week. Lots of stuff to talk about. If you enjoyed the episode, tell us what you thought of our takes on the games that we played today. And we'd love to hear from you. Until next week, take care, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.